As restaurant owners and managers, we're often faced with hard decisions that need to be made quickly. Most decisions fit into one of two categories. One is something bad that is happening that needs to stop, or two, a good opportunity that we want to pursue or make happen. Hey, it's Peter Harmon, the Food Guru, here with your weekly pep talk. My goal is to teach restaurant owners, managers, and chefs, just like you, to focus on eight basic fundamentals that lead to a better life and financial freedom. Today, we're going to discuss the important elements of making an effective decision. The outline for this information comes from one of my management heroes, Peter Drucker. I've also sprinkled in some personal observations and additional wisdom that I garnered from my mentors over the years. I've divided this information into seven steps to help you make an effective decision. The first is to define the problem. Define exactly what the problem is. Number two is to determine if this is an opportunity, a setback, or a major threat. Three, we want to determine if this is a unique problem or a generic problem. Four is to define what the best future outcome is, or could or would be. And number five is to make the actual decision. Number six is to do the thing, to take the action. And seven is to follow through and follow up to see if our solution is actually working and having the desired effect. Let's take these babies one at a time in detail. Thing number one is to define the problem or opportunity. What exactly is the problem or opportunity? Define it exactly. Not conjecture. Tell me what the problem is exactly. Don't be emotional. Don't be hysterical, because it doesn't help. List every single facet of the problem. Don't beat around the bush. Tell me straight up. Be honest and don't candy coat it. This is where most people fail, because they only gather some of the facts, and our people often leave out the worst of the details. And they leave it out because it makes them look bad and even worse, and it makes us look bad, and they don't want to talk about that. So the important thing is to face reality. I need to understand it completely and accurately and clearly. We need to gather the facts, all the facts, the good ones and the bad ones, and don't sweep them under the rug. Then we need to boil it down, to reduce it to its very essence, and then look at it and face it for what it really is. See, when we're afraid and consumed by the problem, we can't think clearly. Stress makes us stupid. That's right. These kind of things stress us out, and that makes us frantic, which makes us stressful, which makes us stupid. So the way around this is to reduce the stress component as much as possible. Always sleep on a decision whenever possible. Remember, stress puts added pressure on us, so be sure to keep a level head and be smart. Be quick, but don't hurry. And whatever you do, don't stress yourself out. Now, and for the good opportunities, the good things, sometimes we get so caught up in the excitement that we don't see the pitfalls. So be careful for what you wish, because you will get it with all the nasty little strings attached. Okay, so thing two, is this an opportunity or a threat? Is this something bad that is holding us back from achieving our goal? Or is this a major catastrophe or emergency? Or is this something good, something really good that can move us toward our goal? Remember, either way, we want to be better off after we make the decision and take the action. See, most people don't see good opportunity and bad opportunity as the same thing, but they really are. We make the decision the same way. They're both actually opportunities to move forward to a better, smarter future. We handle both positive and negative opportunities the same way. So, let's imagine we're building a retaining wall on the side of a hill. We build half of it in one day and the other half the next. And then on the third day, it rains and it washes out the wall. Is this a setback or an opportunity? See, I see it as an opportunity to build a better wall. Because the second time, we get to learn from our mistakes. We get to rebuild it better. And we're going to find a smarter way the second time. Or at least I hope so. Okay, now that brings us to thing number three. We need to categorize the problem. Drucker says this, categorize the problem. There are only two types of problems, generic and unique. So what type of problem is this? A generic problem is something that's happened before, or it happens frequently, or it happens all the time. A recipe is a good example of this. A cook may come and ask, hey, how many shrimp go in and order a shrimp Alfredo? And I would tell them to consult the recipe book or the recipe card, because that's where the answer is. Because we've already solved this problem, and we have a written solution for it. The solution is called a recipe card with a picture of what the finished dish should look like. Now, inventory questions can also fall into this category. Imagine when our sales increase. We often have to increase our pars on our order guide. This does not require a new solution or a new way of thinking. It simply requires a change or an alteration or an adaptation to an existing. Think of generic problems as FAQs, frequently asked questions that we've answered before. One of my mentors used to say, Mr. Harmon, let me remind you of our policy on that. And that was his way of letting me know, hey, this is already solved. You're the idiot here. You don't know what's going on. I've already got this under control. Maybe you ought to get up to speed. Okay, so in addition to generic problems, we have unique problems. These are things that have never happened before or something that we've never seen before. The coronavirus is a perfect example. This outbreak created many unique problems that we never expected to have and we've never had to deal with before. And it's also created some new and exciting opportunities. Don't forget that, because every cloud has a silver lining. Just because a problem is new to you doesn't make it impossible or unique. Remember, to a new manager or a new chef, most generic problems are unique because they've never seen it before. Every unique problem has or will have a solution. It's always a great idea to look around and talk to others about possible solutions before making a radical decision. Today, we consult Siri and Google to help us learn and solve our problems. We also used YouTube because there's a lot of great solutions there as well. Oh, and by the way, so do coaches. See, as a restaurant coach, I help my clients solve their problems, and I can help you too. Peter Drucker says, some problems are a new manifestation of a generic problem. Here's what that means. It's a new problem, but after further review, we realize it's pretty common, and we already know how to deal with this. A new menu item is a good example, or deciding to get into the takeout game is another good example. See, when we add a new item, it's going to require some new thinking. We got to build a new recipe card and all that. But when we build a takeout system, that requires us to answer a lot of questions. But once we figure it all out and we get it documented, then any future problems will have a generic solution. They'll have a generic fix, and our people will just consult the operating manual for the answers. Now, here's a fun example. Imagine you walk in the kitchen and there's water on the floor and it's coming your way. Is this a generic problem or a unique problem? Well, we must investigate further. See, if somebody spilled water on the floor, we need a generic solution. We go get the squeegee or the mop. But if it's a clogged drain that's backing us up, we have to use a more expensive generic solution. We just call Roto-Rooter. But if a tree fell on our roof and rain is pouring in, we have to have a truly unique situation and we need a unique fix. It's at least unique to us. I'm sure other people have had roofs, trees fall on their roof. All right, let's go to thing four. Define the best outcome, the future picture. What does the best possible solution to this problem look like? What does this look like when it's done or fixed? Hey, I just broke a glass on the floor, so I swept it up and bought a new one. Or I just broke my arm. The best solution is to go to the emergency room and have a doctor fix it. Then he can put it in a cast until it heals, and then it should go back to normal. But what if the best alternative isn't available or possible? Will we be forced to accept some alternative version of the best solution? Hey, don't worry about that. Don't worry about the political BS. First, you need to seek the best solution. And then, when you find out that you can't do it the best way, then you can start talking about alternatives. But don't get sucked into solving problems that don't exist. Find the best solution first, and then deal with the fallout and the politics and all the negotiating. Okay, this brings us to thing five. Decide. Make the actual decision. Make the decision that best solves the problem. Choose the best path. Not necessarily the most popular path or the easiest path. Think of the long-term success of the business. We don't just need a quick, instant fix. What's the best way to solve this problem for good? Or what's the best outcome for this opportunity? Take your time. Don't put unnecessary pressure on yourself. Speedy decisions are silly. Only make a speedy decision when absolutely necessary. Don't add stress to the situation. Remember, stress makes us stupid. Make the best decision for the golden goose. You know the story of the golden goose. Well, think of your restaurant as a golden goose, because it is. It's where your money and success comes from. Don't be greedy. Don't be scared. Make the best decision. Choose the path that is the best for the golden goose. You have to protect the golden goose. That's your restaurant. That's your business. Here's a good one. What's the one thing that we can do now today that will make everything else either unimportant or a hell of a lot easier? Let's try that first. Start with the easiest and most obvious solution. What's the fastest and easiest way to fix this? Does this thing even need to be fixed? Or do we just clean up the mess and move on? Start with simple and then go to the more complicated if simple doesn't work. See, we're not looking for the cheapest, laziest way. We're looking for the best way. And yes, sometimes that is an easy and inexpensive fix. And sometimes the solution requires a very serious, expensive, long-lasting fix. See, don't be afraid to ask the question, what happens if we do nothing? Because see, that may be the best strategy in some cases. But know this, hope is not a solution, and prayer is often unreliable. Sometimes you got to grab the bull by the horns and wrestle him to the ground. I want you to pay attention to this next statement, this one right here. Find the best solution first before you start to settle or negotiate. Avoid politics and settling for half-assed solutions. Here's an old story. Remember this when it comes to negotiating and making a concession. Half a pizza is still dinner. But half a baby is a corpse. I know that's a little rough, but it hits the nail right on the head, doesn't it? We need to avoid political solutions that appease all parties. Leave the political stuff to the politicians to deal with. A bad solution is worse than no solution. Okay, this brings us to thing number six. Take the action, do the thing. Create and build the plan. Define the action steps. 1, 2, 3, 4. Convert the decision to action. Take it for a test drive. Work out the bugs. Then determine who's going to do it going forward. This is important. Who is going to champion this initiative? Who's going to lead the charge? And are they capable of handling this? Are they competent? See, personally, I can't bench press 400 pounds. So if you ask me to bench press 400 pounds, I will fail. I'm not going to be the captain of the weightlifting team. So make sure you find the person who best fits the situation and can do the thing and has the competence to make it happen. Then the next question is, do they believe in this? Will they do what it takes to make it happen? Remember, change is hard. Here's an old Roman proverb. Never enact a law you cannot enforce. I love that one because it'll make you look weak. If you can't enforce it, people say, hey, we got away with that one. And when the people think you're weak, they're going to stop doing other things too. And eventually, you'll have total anarchy. Be sure to get your people involved. It's always best to share the knowledge with your people. Determine who needs to know about this and tell them. Let them help you with the transformation. The transformation from here to there is a responsibility of the entire team. This brings us to number 7, follow-up and feedback. These are the steps in a little different way. Create the plan, which means use your knowledge and the knowledge of your team to create the best possible plan. Set a goal for the action. Then share the action. Make sure the people who need to know actually know and understand. Check to make sure they believe in the mission and will do what it takes to achieve the goal. Then execute. Do the thing to the best of your ability. Test your assumptions. Give it a whirl. See what happens. Then evaluate the results. How did it work? Go see for yourself. This is important. Don't just rely on the observations of others. Yeah, you want to listen to others, but be sure to check for yourself. And don't just rely on data either. Data doesn't tell the whole story. See, just because a new dish is selling doesn't mean people like it. Just because someone bought something doesn't mean they're going to come back again and do it and bring their friends. It just means they tried it and maybe they don't like it. You got to think about results. What changes do we need to make? Or should we make any at all? And then we debrief. Okay, hey, what were we supposed to do? Did we do it? What did we think was going to happen and did it happen? Did it work or was it a flop? Did the customer like it? Did the customer love it? What do our people think about it? And here's one. How do we do this better? I love this one. How do we do this better? Don't be afraid to scrap it all and start over at the beginning and build a better plan. Remember this. Even the greatest things become obsolete over time. The Model T Ford, the Walkman, and the flip phone are all gone, gone, and gone. And in conclusion, every restaurant owner has to make decisions. Some are easy and some are hard. If you diligently follow these steps, your decisions will almost make themselves. And to be a better leader, teach your people how to make decisions. Don't just give them the answers. Make them use their noggins and make them think for themselves. My name is Peter Harmon. I am the food guru. My goal is to start a restaurant revolution where every restaurant owner and manager who joins us has the information they need to earn a 10% profit, create financial freedom, and live the life of their dreams. If you're ready to take action and move your restaurant to the next level, here's my simple plan. 1, subscribe to this podcast. This weekly pep talk will keep you on your toes and give you inspiration to keep moving forward. 2, buy my book. I've written a book called Restauranting 101. It focuses on 8 basic fundamentals and it has the power to change your life. And it's available on Amazon today. Search Peter Harmon, Restauranting 101, and buy it. And then after that, come to foodguru.com and sign up for a one-on-one coaching session. As a restaurant owner, you need someone to talk to, someone who understands your struggles and can help you build a strategic plan. We all need a coach to hold us accountable for our actions and results. This is not a webinar or a large group event. I'm not going to pass you off to an assistant. This is simply you and me working together to solve your problems. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.